My name is Georgia Davis. I'm the Superintendent of Education with the Durham District School Board. At Durham District School Board, we call all superintendents superintendents of equitable education because we recognize that no matter what your portfolio, you're responsible for equity work. All members of the senior team have committed to work in equity. I'm also responsible for leadership, innovation, supporting student voice, and professional development integration. I support some family of schools, which includes three secondary schools and their elementary feeder schools, as well as our virtual elementary school. Both bricks and mortar and virtual schools teach me something about equity every day. Identify as a Black woman. I say this because positionality matters. Positionality is defined as the social political context that creates my identity. It includes race, class, gender, sexuality, ability status. It describes how my identity influences and potentially is linked to my bias, understanding, and outlook on the world. I'm going to share a situation with you, some considerations to think about and do before, during, and after the situation. Then I'll make some connections to two of Singleton's conditions in Courageous Conversations about Race. I will end with some tips and reflections. So I'm thinking about a situation where a parent spoke to the principal regarding what she considered microaggressions. Microaggressions are statements, actions that can be indirect, subtle, or unintentional, and they're discriminatory because they target a member of a marginalized group and could be an insensitive comment. In this example, the parent's child has been ignored by a white teacher. Small situations keep happening where the teacher does not respond in the same way to the Black child as she would a white child. The Black child is given consequences for doing the same things as the white child does with no resulting consequence. And the parent feels the school doesn't respond when microaggressions occur. The parent may also be thinking about when they were a child and this happened to them. So they're disappointed and they have feelings of grief. And they're grieving the fact that there continues to be institutional racism and oppression. And the grief sometimes comes in the form of anger. As a white superintendent or principal, you may think it's nothing because you have not experienced that. And this is not real to you. You may wonder why the family is so upset about what is seemingly a small or insignificant incident. Consider this. Consider each microaggression. Each time the child was treated differently, assumed that they were not smart enough, good enough. The parents considered that they didn't care about their child's education because they were at work and didn't volunteer at school or come to evening activities. Consider each of these assumptions or statements or actions made, microaggressions. Consider them like a drop of water that is falling in a bucket. Eventually, the last drop, last microaggression, causes the bucket to spill and fall over. That is the context for the meeting that you will be attending and the conversation that you will be having. You will need to listen and consider your bias. So a bias is a tendency to be for or against something without a reasonable justification. And a bias influences how we evaluate a situation objectively. So when considering the situation, when you're going to meet with the parents, whether you're a superintendent or principal, there are certain things you need to think about and do before, during, and after the meeting. So before the meeting, prepare your team, talk to your teacher, your vice principal, yourself about learning as much as you can about the concerns. Preparation takes talking, thinking, listening, and reflection. So talk to your team to know and acknowledge bias and defensiveness or white fragility. White fragility is that discomfort, that defensiveness on the part of a white person when confronted by information about racial inequity or injustice. So responses could set in because when this confrontation happens, when they're questioned, it triggers emotions and activates behaviors. So don't try to solve the problem or run straight to solution. Remember, this is a bucket that is spilled over. It will take time and trust that results from listening and actions. So consider the many perspectives that will be in the meeting. Here's what the white perspective or the white person may be feeling. They may be feeling insulted, angry, scared, accused, silenced. and their behaviors may result in crying or arguing or focusing on intentions or avoiding or denying. So when you know about these feelings, you can prepare for them before the meeting occurs. Do not give in to them. Prepare and respond to them. During the meeting, listen and believe. When you're a racialized person, you know what microaggressions, oppression, and racism looks, sounds, and feels like. So believe the person when they tell you that. Don't make excuses. You will want to interrupt, don't. You will want to leave, stay. Take notes so that you'll stay focused. You will feel some anger because you may be called a racist and you believe that doesn't define you. Think about all the times that a racialized person has been called names that do not define them. It causes harm. Remember that you represent an institution that is racist. This has been proven by census and academic data, as well as suspension data and graduate rates. There's nothing to defend here. Acknowledge the harm that has been done and take responsibility for it. Don't make excuses for it. Listening and learning for ways to make it right and address the harm. Ask questions. Marley Adams, in her research on questioning, calls them learning questions versus judging questions in her research. She says to use learning questions and avoid judging questions. So learning questions are thoughtful questions, solution-focused with and win-win related. They're questions such as, what's possible? What are the choices? What are they thinking? What am I thinking, feeling, and wanting? What assumptions am I making and what can I learn? Judging questions are automatic reactions, blame-focused, win-lose related, and thinking about whose fault is it? What's wrong with me? What's wrong with them? So stick to the learning mentality. After the meeting, debrief. Ask questions. Check in with your staff for learning. What was heard? Check for recognition that impact is what matters, not just intent. What is the plan to support? Who do you need to support with the actions and the next steps? Recognize that action is more important than words or promises. Think about the learning your community, your school community, your system may need as a result of what has happened and the initial school response. How do you support your principals, teachers, staff, superintendents in situations similar to this, where there are race, identity, and equity considerations? Singleton talks about six conditions to consider in his research about courageous conversations about race. I will unpack two of them. One strategy he talks about is context. We need to establish a racial context that is personal, local, and immediate. Engage the participants in the meeting to consider everyone's racial experience and awareness. Focus on the personal, the local, the immediate. Context matters, perspective matters, and positionality matters. Think about your positionality, because that influences your understanding and outlook of the world. You can think about your positionality by asking yourself questions such as, in what ways do my racial cultural background influence how I experience the world? How do I evaluate and interpret others and their experiences? What racialized cultural experiences have shaped my decisions, practices, approaches, and agenda? In what ways do the community, students, staff, parents, racial cultural backgrounds influence how they experience this work? And how do I know? And how do I navigate and balance my own interests and agendas with those of my students, staff, and parents when they may be inconsistent or diverge from mine? Another strategy that Singleton talks about is whiteness. So he says, examine the presence and role of whiteness and its impact on the conversation and the problem being addressed. So that refers to white fragility and the feelings of defensiveness and anger that can occur during these types of conversations. Therefore, here's some considerations and things to remember. Use the pre-meeting, during the meeting, and post-meeting strategy to support. Communication is about listening and speaking. Listen mostly. Figure out who you need to support you. Debrief with a racialized person or an ally you trust so they can support you with your bias and defensiveness. Recognize these feelings so that you can have strategies in place to respond to them. Recognize that racialized students are visible and invisible in the institution, in your schools, at the same time. They're visible because they're not white, and they're invisible because they're not reflected in the principal, teacher, or other students, as well as in books and curriculum that they're learning. So they feel they have no voice, and when they speak up, it's often met with defensiveness, and they don't feel their perspective is appreciated or heard. So recognize and accept that you have unearned privilege even though you're working as hard, you've worked hard for what you have. Tina Lopez and Barb Thomas give us some additional tips in their research about racism in organizations. They point out that white people have to be convinced that racism or other forms of oppression are operating in the organization, while racialized people have to work hard to convince white people that racism exists and provide anecdotal and other forms of evidence to make their case and manage the pain that these discussions evoke. Therefore, when someone says to you that they've experienced racism, believe them. They have been living in their skin their whole lives. They know what it feels like. So in conclusion, racial equity work is part of the business of the educational organization and therefore part of our daily responsibilities as school and district leaders. Remember that equity work is a collective responsibility to ensure that students feel welcome, that they belong, and that their voices matter. To do that, we need to ensure that parents, staff, and community feel that too. We do this by seeking to understand more, listen, believe, engage in conversation, and exercise intellectual humility. Intellectual humility, according to Adam Grant in his book entitled Think Again, is to question our current understanding, become curious about what information we are missing, the bias we may have that have informed our decisions and our actions. It's the cornerstone of learning, unlearning, and equity work. This curiosity will lead us to new perspective and discoveries about ourselves, others, and our environment, which in turn maintains our humility. He goes on to say that if knowledge is power, knowing what you don't know is wisdom.